Mr. Mann, reel 14. Can I just confirm, Mr. Mann, that when you were on the ship going to Anzio, you were still with the medics of the battalion?
Yes, the driver of the medical truck.
So, as you approached Anzio, were you, or was your battalion in the first wave of the invasion?
Yes, they were there. There was the Americans as well. They were sort of slightly north of Anzio, but actually, the battalion was a division, really, the landing on Anzio. The landing itself, it wasn't, I say, as severe as what Salerno was. There were defences there, but I think it was the layout of the land, and what made it maybe a little bit easier than Salerno was that the Germans held it for a while and then pulled back to the higher ground. And were more or less overstrength. Well, the advances took place, and the battalion were ahead of my solution actually with this truck, but I know we pulled into some woods to the left of the road, say, going up towards the front. But then came to a position where the line was more or less held, and there wasn't any further advances to be made. The position was whole, almost out of, maybe 12 miles or something like that.
Can you recall the scenes on the beach as you yourself landed?
When we were still out at sea, when the infantry, the line troops, landed there, but they went in on landing craft. The larger boats were out at sea, and then of course there was support from the Royal Navy who did the shelling and that. There was air support, not massive air support, but there was air support, and there were actually German planes flying over as well. I remember a German one flying over with part of a wing missing, it ended up into the sea, but there was strafed on the beach. Was casualties, the colonel of the Oxford Bucks, he actually got wounded in the hand. And of course that was about as far as he got.
What was his name?
Cruddas.
Still Cruddas. Yeah. Were you watching this going on from the boat?
We were at sea, yes. But as soon as a bit of an advance was made inland, sort of off the beach itself, you can say, then they started going in. I mean, with the Bren gun carriers, more or less first. And then eventually there was tanks following up, and then we were after the tanks, I remember.
What were your feelings? I mean, this is a first time for you, wasn't it, landing from the sea? In an action situation.
It was a bit of a mixed feeling in one way. One more, you think, I wish it was the dickens out of this. A bit apprehensive of what might happen, and at the same time you were sort of eager to get off the boat and onto the land, because if the boat had got hit at all, well then you'd be down into the water. You'd rather better fall on the land than fall into the water. But then again, you had your comrades with you, and you'd be passing comments on this, that, and the other, and see shells come over to boats at sea and say that was our ships and say that was a near one. And you'd be ducking and diving, and if they came over with the planes and started strafing, well, that's you look to see if you could get a bit of cover on the boat. You were eager to get into it in one sense, and then you contradict yourself by saying, well, I wish we weren't at this, but we didn't go out to it.
Had your infantry and your battalion, had they suffered losses on the landing itself?
No, there weren't heavy losses on the landing itself. It was after they got into the line. And as I said, the Germans fell back to this defence position, and the orders, the army orders, were more or less to hold the line. Now, had they known that the defences were really weak compared with the invasion force, they could have gone further ahead, and they understand from what I've heard since the war that they could have gone straight through to Rome. that didn't happen. Reinforcements were brought up by the Germans, and then the counter-attacks were put in, and the majority of losses of the battalion I was with, the Oxen Bucks, was by being taken prisoner. We were surrounded. There was German paratroops was one of the brigade, and the Panzer Division as well came up. And the companies were spread out, and as I said, whilst I was with the medical this time, when the counter-attack started, that's when I was brought up to the line, along with cooks and other drivers and that, and we had to be taken up. Fortunately, I was put with D Company, which came off the lightest in the battalion.
Just before we go to that, these heavy losses that the battalion suffered, were they then in the position of being up to the foothills where the Germans were holding the higher ground?
Basically,
that you were talking about, yeah. How did that occur? Did you ever find out how did they got themselves trapped in that way?
No, I think what it was just the order was to hold the lines, static, no more advancing, hold the line. Not knowing that the enemy was really so weak there, had to push ahead. And then, of course, when the reinforcements came, and there was an order to advance, he didn't get very far before the Germans counterattacked with his reinforcements. And that's when there was a lot of casualties, and, as I say, a lot were taken prisoner by the Germans. Like a pincer movement going round them and cutting off even a full company at a time.
And you, at this point, joined or were put into D Company. What platoon were you in?
I don't know whether it would be the 14th or 15th, I think. I just obviously couldn't remember the platoon it was in.
And as a corporal,
it was definitely D Company, I remember that.
And as a corporal, were you given a section to command?
Yes. The position that we were in was on a bit of a wadi, and the top of this wadi was above actually a trench house, so you couldn't really see ahead of you on account of this mound in front. It was a case of crawling up if you wanted to see what was going on. There was, I should say, about 8 of us in this particular position, and there was an officer, a platoon officer, who would go between the various sections to keep contact when it was possible.
Do you remember his name?
I believe it was Holmes. Well, I'm a bit of a loss with numbers, even nowadays, and when you get to meet people, and then what's the name afterwards? So I'm afraid that is one thing with names I am definitely a bit weak on. But, as I say, we were holding this position, and there was two, I wouldn't say there were real attacks coming, more on patrols coming through. But we never had the severity of the other companies. And then, of course, that is a position where I mentioned previously had been shelled by our own artillery. The purpose of the artillery at that time was to create a creeping barrage and then for us to follow and make advances. But after being shelled and that, what I'm assuming that the artillery was stopped, and we didn't actually go into an advancement, we just held this line.
Did you know it was your own guns that were shelling you?
Oh, yes, because you could tell they were sort of creeping up from behind us. The shell fire, instead of going further afield, was coming up to us.
So you must have had some comments to make about that.
I don't think you can put them on tape. So it was a case of just getting down into this slit trench and hoping for the best. Lost some of them by, but they came close as well, and it was nothing to hear bits of shrapnel and then just coming away past over your heads and that, thumping into things.
Were you commanding this group of 8 men, section of 8 men?
Well, you say commanding, really, the platoon sergeant was really commanding them. In your platoon, of course, you had 3 sections. So, basically, as a corporal, it wasn't a case of where we're in a position isolated. In an isolated position, of course, the highest ranking person. Even if it was a Lance Corporal, would be in command. But there wasn't that position there. Another thing was that if you were in a position and there was no NCO, somebody had to take command. And that was decided by your date of enlistment and service. So it didn't matter really in one sense who it was. If he'd been a longer service, shall we say, than the rest, he was virtually in command, whether you wanted him or not. But of course, we never had a position like that, so I couldn't say. You can just imagine if it could have been the dunce of the section or the dunce of the platoon or something. And whilst he may have been in command, of course, no doubt we had those comments there, and one would say I was in charge.
The platoon sergeant that you mentioned, do you remember his name?
Yeah, Rennick. Rennick at that time.
What was he like in action?
He was a good man. He was quite a bit older than me, because I was only a youngster, you say. But he had the courage about him, and if it comes to looking over the top of the hill, or had you seen anything, or this, that, and the other, and when he come round, he would go and have a look over himself, and he would say, watch, 2 o'clock to your right, or 2 o'clock to your left. He says, there seems to be something over there, but never go. Just warn us to us, see if you were all right. Of course, every day there had to be a contact with like a roll call to send buffers and what the casualties were, or if you were all friendly and correct.
Were you sending out patrols at night?
There were patrols went forward, but I didn't go on a patrol there. I remember one, there was a lad called Andy Love, and he was in the Durham's with us in the transfer. And he went on a patrol and went past us. And he had been wounded previously in the early stages and come back to the battalion. And he went out. And he said, "Oh, I come back." So when they went out, of course, you had a password, which they had to use when they come back again. And I had words with him and Andy. He went out on patrol, but he didn't come back again, or at least he didn't come back past us. And I think he was taken prisoner. But he used to get the patrols go out, and it was a funny thing, because during the night, there was some kind of you would hear a voice shouting out, "Oh, Bill, come on, Bill, I can't move, I've been wounded," or there's shouting coming in there. But of course, you would never answer that, because it was night time, you couldn't see who it was, and quite often it was used by the enemy who was shouting that to attract you. You could have shouted Bill or that or whatever your name was, and then of course you were given your position away. So, even if it was true, it was hard enough for the bloke out there.
What are your own memories of the situation and what was happening to you on that perimeter at Anzio?
I think the main one was the getting a bit of food up now and then. There was a patrol. I came over one night when we all had to walk and up and that. But we didn't go from our positions, and one of the lads was killed. But we had some Germans fall near us. There's two of them actually. And they sort of crawled. It wasn't a run that I saw, but it was a crawling over this top ridge. And of course, as soon as you got the silhouette or something, everybody pulled up.
So you were like on the reverse slope of a ridge, were you?
But probably about 2 foot or so above your head level, you could see. But anybody come over and actually have to come up the skyline of it, and it's all be seen.
Were you under shell fire?
Yes, we were shell fired and mortar fire as well.
Did you get particularly heavy?
The shell fire, I wouldn't say it was excessively heavy. So it seemed to be more shell fire going behind us than what was actually on us. Especially, as I said, with this and the Oani gun, you could shoot for miles. Didn't matter where you were, you could hear that go off. But the shell, it wasn't excessively heavy. No, not what it had been previously. But from that position, I didn't get any further forward.
Were you there for how long?
There, I think there about a week, roughly in that position. And at the end of that, I would say a week, though it was only days like that. And from that position, we were relieved by the Green Howards.
Were you supplied at night only? It was the only time you could move?
Yes, under the cover of darkness, as it were. The supplies would come up, I think, on one occasion they came right up with them, but on the others, the goods were just dumped down and there'd never be, 40, 50 yards away, something like that. They were dropped and then we had to pick them up and bring them forward.
Could you move reasonably well at night?
No, it didn't go. There's some time later, I thought I might get out of the trench if it was taken short of that. But other time, you just have to do everything in the trench and sling it out with your young trenching tool, shove it out the way it could be as far as you could. But it was wet as well up there. And you were just sort of stood in mud most of the time, and even if you wanted to rest, you crouched down and then you were actually sat in it.
Were you in slit trenches?
Slit trenches, two men to a trench. Yeah, two men to a trench. The officer had a trench which was only a matter of 2 or 3 yards behind where he used to take things from. The one that went after the sniper, which I think we mentioned previously.
Did he come to you during the evening to see what the position was and how you were getting on?
It would come round maybe 2 or 3 times during the day, and the rest of the platoon had always a bit to the right. The wadi sort of fell down to the right, and there was some more horn and and then further over, another memory that I have, it went up to the heights again, and one morning when it was stood to at dawn, and gradually getting lighter, we could see figures actually on our right hand side, further afield than what the company was. And of course, at first we thought they were Germans, but it was a range. We didn't open up because the range was a bit too far to have been given away position. But anyhow, it turned out to be American troops there, but at the sort of early morning, and with their helmets on, they did look like Germans. We just began to wonder what was going to happen from there. Anyhow, thank God they were Americans. They held the line up there.
It must have been pretty miserable for you, though. As you say, it was raining and wet, and you're being shelled and mortared.
That's it. When you're in a position like that, you don't get your 10 o'clock cups of tea. You don't stop for your lunch or a meal. That's what comes along. And if it rains, well, it just rains. You could do about it. You didn't even have the tent with you. Put the tent over you. You didn't have an umbrella. You were just stood in this muddy hole and suffering the weather. Usually when it was like that, there was not much action you didn't appreciate. The thing was, keep yourself as dry as you could. You had a gas cape, which was more or less waterproof. But even so, you still got soaked.
What condition were you in then by the end of the week, after being in those conditions?
You could come out the line, and I think when you were in the line, there was always a tension there. But when you come out, it seems that the tension would ease maybe a little bit, but you could be more or less shattered. And you would get back to your echelon or the echelon wherever you were going back to, and there was. benches more or less there, or dugouts, where maybe two or three of them you could even get into, just dug out of the ground. And you were allowed to lay in on the next morning after you'd come out of the line. And what breakfast would be later, maybe about 10 o'clock or so, for the breakfast. But it was a big relief to get out there. Well, that occasion was only for about a week when we're in that position. When you think you hadn't really had a wash or anything there, with your clothes, it was hot weather, you'd been sweating all the time. Yeah, in that case, it was rain most of the time, so we were more or less shut in that place. I think really it was with the ages that we were that we could put up with it. I've often thought nowadays I'd have to go through some of the things like that, whether I would never survive. No. It's a terrible feeling. But that was it. You could see planes come over at town, you see the airport use, I think, but they'll get back there and, you know, at least they'll get a good night's sleep, or should do, unless they'll put up the flight. And even the Navy wives, I wouldn't like to be in the Navy because I love swimming. But to think what could happen at sea, I think I'd rather something happen on the land where you had your feet down. But of course, the consolation with the Navy, if they were off duty, I mean, they'd have rotten times on watching on deck and all that, or in action. But at least they could maybe go down below decks and get dried off when time permitted. But an infantryman in the trench, that was it. You couldn't go back or say, I'll go for a walk around the block or something like that. Or just have a nap underneath a bit cover. You know. The elements, I think, there were at times as bad as what the enemy was. You didn't know which was worse.
You mentioned the artillery support, although it landed on you on at least one occasion. In addition to artillery, did you have support from tanks?
Oh, tanks went all the world. The American tanks come. But the position where we were was the Wadi type of countryside, so of course the tanks couldn't operate just where we were. It was in the business. Even when we were coming out the line that night, we got so far down to a road where there's a road and it led to the crossover where the railway crossed the road. But anyhow, on this road we got under there and the tank was coming along. We didn't really turn and it turned out to be a German one. And he opened fire, but we just dropped into the ditch at the side of the road. It didn't stop, it just opened up and then just carried on. So where he ended up, I don't know. He just carried on down the road. But I didn't see the tanks that were on the invasion just in the area where we were, because it wasn't tank sort of country. For all around the surrounding area, there were plenty of flat spots.
In relation to the whole beachhead and perimeter, whereabouts was your battalion?
Well, when you say where when we went on, Anzio itself was more of Anzio, was to the left of us. We were sort of on the outskirts of it, and then just got onto this road that headed up north of Italy. I remember it was a wooded area after we got through Anzio on the left, and it seemed to get plainer the way across to the right. The suspicion that one was called up into the line when we came out of this wood, carried on north to this flyover crossover where it was, and went down the road to the right, and then it just went into sort of the hilly, muddy sort of country. That's as much as I can remember that.
You'd been close to the action in the past, of course, but not actually in it, hadn't you? How did you feel when they said to you, look, you're going into D Company and you're going into the front line?
I don't think I realised what was going on there, because, I mean, I had been near enough to it when I was doing stretcher bearing previously, so I had a bit of an idea there. But at the same time, the thought was, well, if they're going to put us up in the line, it isn't going to be any tea party. But as it turned out to be, it could have been a lot worse than what it was there. So that was the part when they took over the Bren gun. There's a chap in the trench with me, they called him George Young. I also remember that. I've never seen or heard of him since the war. But on this Bren gun as well, you said before, well, you shelled them out, shelled them mortars, and there was a piece of shrapnel went through what they call the flash eliminator, which is at the end of the barrel to prevent the flash showing itself. And it actually bent a bit of this flash eliminator over the open part of the barrel. And you know, the next day came up with the rations and supplies, plus I sent back for a new barrel for the gun. That was actually from shallow water fire shrapnel. When that happened, of course, didn't dare fire the gun, the bullet would have hit this bit. Might have bent it out, you didn't risk firing that. I remember saying it, oh, well, all I've got now then is your rifle or grenades. So,
were you just with the rifle, other than the Bren gun, of course? Were you still had the 303 rifle, did you? You hadn't got Thompson machine guns or whatever?
The Thompson I got later on. Yeah.
Did you get the opportunity to shoot at any Germans in this position? I mean, yourself, personally?
I fired at them with what they are saying, or some people say, well, did you get in there? Well, my answer to that, to tell you the truth, has always been, if there's a few of you firing at somebody, you don't know it's hitting. But more or less pass it over as if they were there. Yeah.
I think this was the occasion when you said that, obviously, you were pulled into the front line. Cooks and drivers had been brought in as well. Was this the same occasion?
Oh, yes, yeah.
And they acquitted themselves all right, in spite of their lack of infantry fighting.
I think it was the case of you or him, in many of the cases. Whilst there were cooks and drivers, of course, they'd all initially been put through training as infantrymen. So it wasn't the case of, you know, there were a cook and that's it, I don't know anything about a rifle. They had been trained in the early days. So if they hadn't previously been up, well, that would be the case. And of course, you learn quickly in those sort of conditions.
When you're caught like that, in a situation as desperate as that, at the level of the ordinary soldier, do you criticise the hierarchy for finding you and putting you into that situation?
Oh, yes. I mean, there was a bit of the old song, I don't know, I mentioned it previous about, we have to join up and volunteer, join Fred Carno's arm. Well, Fred Carno was a circus operator. And then, if it hadn't been for the war, we'd have been at home before. You know, and Felicia Obama, Felicia was one of the ministers in there. you would criticise and say, what are we doing here? Why have we got to do this? You know, because why couldn't somebody else do it? They were going down and taking the same opinion. But I remember on one occasion the CO, this was Germano, and the game the Germans, as I said, they always fell back to a higher position, which was more defensive. And we'd been up, and we couldn't take this, because as you got so far up this mountainish territory, there was like a plateau, and then the mountain went up again, and we couldn't get across this plateau, under that heavy fire. So we were pulled out, and went into a village, and after a few days we were told we were going back in. And we were told that until, this was the battalion, not a second of the battalion was told, until we take this object, which I think was Germano, we would not be relieved from the line. And as I say, this was the only case I can remember where the commanding officer says, "We take no prisoners." We take no prisoners. Anyhow, we went back up there. A bit of rattling and fire, all that going on. You were acting wrong there, there too. And we were pulled out, and they sent in a brigade, which was three battalions, to replace our one battalion. And whilst it was the tail end of their stay up there, they sent another three battalions in, another brigade, to clear through this Jumano.